just got dyslexia, okay?
Dishonor on you! Dishonor on your cow!
Welcome, foolish mortals.
It is with deepest pride and greatest pleasure that we welcome you tonight.
The reference here is very obscure.
Welcome to the obscure world of Disney. You're listening to the Obscure Disney Podcast.
It's our belief that no detail is too small, no character cameo too short, and no quirk too strange to be celebrated.
And with new episodes every Tuesday and Thursday, why not get an annual pass wherever you get your podcast from, or find us at obscuredisneypodcast.com.
And see all of our fun patches at disneypatch.com.
Steve, do you know that they say the neon lights are bright on Broadway?
And lights are bright on Broadway. I've heard that before. Talk about things to be thankful about.
Thankful for Broadway. I've been a big fan of musicals and musical theater for a very long time.
Properly so. Yes.
I think the first professional show that I saw, like full on, like touring company, I saw Phantom of the Opera.
Mine too. That was my first one.
We are so alike.
I think it was pretty much every. It was probably the only one that was touring, right?
It's true. And it was the most prolific one that was touring. So if it was coming through, they're like, oh, Phantom's in town. You better go see it.
Right.
You know?
Completely right.
And I'd seen other productions before that. I'd seen Fiddler on the Roof and things like that before. But never with the production values that comes with a real Broadway show.
Uh-huh.
And it just blew me away. And so began my lifelong appreciation for musical theater.
Broadway, all from Phantom of the Opera. Thank goodness they came out with that show.
Right.
And changed a generation.
People are like, it's not really that good of a show. I'm like, it's really not, but I don't care. I have a great time with it. It's fun, you know?
Yeah. What? Why would they say it's not a great show? They lie.
Well, there are some holes, and apparently it's very difficult to sing and things like that.
Oh, so. Yeah. That's perfect. This is exactly what I look for in a Broadway show.
When you're auditioning, that's what you look for?
Yeah, I don't want
an impossible to sing show.
Listen, if I can sing it, you know that you can do better.
Oh, look out, Sarah Brightman. Steve's coming for your gig. No, so it only makes sense for a lot of people, especially those a bit younger than us even, who grew up during the Disney Renaissance, that Disney would at one point cast their gaze at Broadway.
Right.
And the reason for that is because of the Disney Renaissance. If you look at some of the movies, especially after Walt died, up into the beginning of the Disney Renaissance, the music wasn't great.
Yeah.
It was kind of in addition to, it was background.
Yeah.
It wasn't really important to the story.
Yeah, where did the Sherman Brothers go?
They had to retire eventually.
It's too bad.
And so when they started making The Little Mermaid, they hired on Howard Ashman, who was a Broadway musical writer.
Okay.
You'll know him, of course, from he's the one that wrote Little Shop of Horrors.
Oh, no way.
Yeah.
We just saw that just the other day.
We did just see that.
Huh.
Good show. Good show, y'all.
Audrey, too. She scares me.
And so they brought him on because they wanted music to play more of a part in their movies.
Good for them.
And so Howard Ashman wrote it like a Broadway show, with the music coming from a place where you need to sing to get it out.
Yeah.
You know?
It shows, too.
Yeah. It makes sense 100% for a Disney movie to work with music that way. And so from that point on, Disney has basically made animated musicals for years after that. Hence the Disney Renaissance.
There you go. And the way it should be. Right. This is the way it should be. This is the way all cartoons should be done, I think.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, like music is so important to a Disney movie that you can't imagine Little Mermaid without the music in it.
Right.
It wouldn't be nearly the same movie. right?
Up where they walk, up where they talk. Did I get that wrong?
You're so wrong.
Whatever.
I've just learned that you get it wrong every time, and it's fine. So
where they stay all day. Okay, I'm done.
So eventually, they decided that they would be willing to try a Broadway show.
Okay.
And they decided to go with Beauty and the Beast,
mm-hmm.
Because they had hired actual Broadway performers to do the voices and singing in Beauty and the Beast.
Interesting, because I thought that, for some reason in my mind, I thought Frozen was the first time they really did this, but it's interesting to know that that's really kind of like where a lot of their good shows came from,
potentially, for sure.
Basically, right?
Yeah, because Frozen definitely has Idina Menzel in it,
who
is a Broadway staple at this point.
Completely right.
So, it was kind of unusual back then.
To do it for, like, Beauty and the Beast.
Right.
Yeah.
And so they decided that they were going to try to do it with Beauty and the Beast and see what they could do. And originally there was a lot of hemming and hawing about whether or not this was a good idea. Will people pay money to go see on stage what they've already seen in the theater?
Oh, sure.
And what we know now is that people will pay money to go see in the theater what they've already seen in the theater.
With
them remaking everything. So they needn't have worried, apparently. A stage performance is so different from a movie experience that I think they were pretty safe to start with, I think.
Yes, somewhat. On the other hand, though, I mean, I don't know. I can see where there would have been a lot of... because the other thing about Broadway is that it has such a very specific clientele that goes to the professional version of Broadway, right? The Broadway in New York City, that I could see where people would be concerned about the fact that it would... They like to have a different mindset completely. And going into it with what they would consider to be a kid's point of view, I can see would definitely be a risk. And Broadway musicals are not cheap. They're always tens and tens of millions of dollars, if not hundreds, to build. True. Right? So,
and it's not like Disney didn't have the money, but true.
If there's anybody that can burn money, they got it. True, but a lot of Broadway shows don't end up making money. A good majority
don't. Most of them don't. Yeah. The ones that you know and love, those are the ones that have made money. And for every single one of those, there's probably 3 to 4 that didn't make it.
Just does not make money.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so they decided to undertake this. It was under Michael Eisner. The much maligned Michael Eisner. And he, of course, wanted complete control.
Oh, no.
He didn't like the idea of handing over Disney properties to random people.
Oh, yeah, I can see that.
They hired a less experienced director so that they could have more control.
Over him specifically?
And so the director wouldn't try to push his own image onto the production. They wanted someone they could push around, basically.
Sure.
And so, yeah, they hired a relatively unknown director to do it.
Well, and isn't the story basically completely written for you? It's just pretty much adapt this story, these songs, to this show.
Yes and no. They actually had the person, I wish I had written her name down, the person that wrote the movie version for them, they asked her to come and do a treatment to do to stage. And she found it very daunting to try to adapt to a stage production.
Interesting.
Because it is a longer running time. You need to flesh out characters that weren't as fleshed out before.
Yeah. And you do need to elevate the story as well.
Right. And you need to put across things on stage that you could do in film with a close-up.
Okay, yeah.
You know, but you can't do that on stage. So it's a very different medium and trying to get things to work between.
Right.
And she added in a couple things. They wrote 6 whole new songs
for
the stage production.
Huh.
Which is a lot of music. Because Beauty and the Beast has a lot of music already.
Right.
To think that they added
6 new songs. Because Aladdin only got 1.
They had a couple. I saw an out-of-town tryout of the Broadway version of Aladdin.
Oh, you did?
I did. And there was a lot of music in there that I had not heard before.
Oh, interesting. Oh, so, can't wait to talk about that further.
Right. So she added, they added 6 new songs to it. And then those of you who have seen the live action version that they filmed, you know that in the movie, the threat is the people in the castle are turning more and more inanimate as time goes on.
Uh-huh.
And basically that they're going to die by turning into inanimate objects if actually the curse isn't broken. Clock. Right. And she's the one that originated that idea on the Broadway stage.
Wow.
Which I thought was bold of her to do.
Yeah. What happens in the cartoon? They just nothing?
They'll just stay that way.
They just... they become locked into that position. Right. Oh, I see.
There's no hope of them not being...
And then this objects. One added an additional threat that they had a timeline put on top of it.
Right.
Harsh.
It's always had the timeline. If he can't learn to love and be loved by someone else by the time the last petal falls off the enchanted rose,
yeah,
he'll remain a beast.
Aww.
And in the movie, his servants will stay as pots and candles and such, right?
Yeah.
But then in the live action one and in the stage play, they'll become inanimate, so he'll be alone as the beast in the castle.
Now, how did they do those characters of, like, Cogsworth, for example, in Luminaire?
The costuming on stage was excessively difficult for obvious reasons.
Yeah.
You have, you know...
How do you make your wardrobe run around the stage?
Right? I found it really interesting to read up on their costume design. I love behind the scenes stuff. Mm-hmm. And they basically, the poor actors in this show have to, I don't know if it's currently still this way, but the original cast had to go through crazy stuff. The guy that plays Lumiere, the candle, has basically 2 butane torches in his hands.
Oh, wow.
And basically, he said, it's like carrying around 2 hams for the entire show.
Oh, my gosh.
So they're heavy, and you need to dance with them, and you're in a restrictive costume in general. Mrs. Potts had to have a chiropractor because her costume required her to hold her arm up the entire performance. And she's like, this is painful.
I can't believe that.
Belle's signature yellow dress,
yeah,
was so big and so cumbersome that she only wore it on stage, and the second she got off stage, they hooked it to a bunch of wires and flew it up into the flies above the stage.
Wow. Because
it was so heavy and so cumbersome that she couldn't walk off too far off with it. Yeah. And she couldn't get it through, like, doors because it has big, massive hoop skirts and things in it.
What? So I want to see this thing.
Literally, these costumes, these actors sacrificed a lot
to
get the look right.
Dang.
And that's not even... I mean, they had to fight for that because Disney wanted them to look exactly like the cartoon, right? And to the point that the gentleman playing the Beast, they wanted him wearing, like, basically a full latex mask so that he looked like the Beast.
Yeah.
And they're like, he can't sing that way. It's messing with his voice. The audio is terrible. And so to prove their point, during their out-of-town tryouts, they did an entire run-through with no costuming whatsoever.
Oh, okay.
To show them that the show could stand without the costuming.
Oh,
it's
wow.
Just a benefit to have the costuming. Because in the theater...
Oh, that's interesting.
Right?
Yeah.
It's a good way to do it because in the theater, you're required to suspend disbelief.
Right.
More so than you are in movies.
Yeah, I don't know how many Black Box productions I've seen of stuff where it's literally just like a chair and then people walking around a kitchen that's not even there. Like it's literally...
Right, pretending to mix
things. Yeah. And you'll see them wash dishes at a sink that's not even there. And in your mind, you really start to see the kitchen as if it's truly there.
Right.
Incredible.
Or even they have shows with a lot of puppets involved, and you think at first, oh, it's going to be really distracting if you can see the actors working the puppets. But eventually you forget that the actors are there, and you just focus on the puppets.
Yeah.
And it works really well.
Yeah. Now, so it's almost like a reverse of the Black Box, like all the people wearing black costumes
in
the big colorful scene.
Right.
That just seems crazy.
I found it. Although so I do have to
say that with the costuming behind people, in a way, I would almost wish that they would kind of zero out the background a little bit more. Now the costumes, you know, specifically for like Olaf, right? In
we're talking about Frozen.
Yeah, in Frozen, mm-hmm. His costume, the guy that wears that controls Olaf, mm-hmm. His costume is so big and it literally looks like a secondary character. Mm. And so in some ways, I think, gosh, I almost wish you were a little bit simpler so I could just focus on Olaf.
Oh, okay. Like,
so I could see where a blacked out costuming for an entire show would be amazingly interesting to see.
Okay. I can see that too. I think most people are okay with it, but yeah, I could see how it would be nice to.
And the audience, they didn't know that they were missing out on the costumes, and so they responded well.
I'm not sure. I didn't read too far into that section, but the idea was, I would assume that they would have told the audience, you're getting a no costume run through. And it's an out of town tryout, so what are you going to do? Complain? Uh-huh. You know, like, there it is. And they then they had to cast this thing, right? Right. And originally they wanted to bring on the people that played it in the movie, mm-hmm. but they couldn't for whatever reason. And so they did like a search, obviously, for these characters. And all of them did interesting things, but the most interesting to me was the actress that was first cast to play Belle. Uh-huh. She was one of the few people in the world that had never seen the animated movie when they were doing it.
No way.
And so when she went into
audition... How did audition, they find her?
I don't know. When she went into audition, she was playing it as a character. She was reading the script and she was playing it a bit more funny, a bit more comedic. Whereas everybody else, they said they had roughly like 500 women audition.
Uh-huh.
Everyone else was just kind of doing a copy of what the movie did.
Right. We've seen it so many times as kids, right?
And it's almost impossible not to take get on right that.
And if you have different inflection in your voice in any way, you'd feel like you're being have a disservice to the character that you're playing.
Right.
And I could see that where she didn't have that reference to go off of.
Right.
Fantastic.
I think it's a great way to do it.
Yeah.
And she didn't see the movie until after she was cast. That was the day the day she got officially offered the part was the first day she saw the Disney animated film.
Oh, wow.
And so I'm sure it was a mind-blowing experience to look at the movie and go, oh, that is not at all how I read that, you know?
Which is what you want from a Broadway production of a Disney show.
Right. You want the same, but different.
Uh-huh.
But unfortunately, that's what we get with the remakes of the movies now, too. Yep. So you get 100%. Careful what you wish for.
Yeah.
And so a couple more interesting facts about this show. It ran for 13 years on Broadway.
Good run.
Yeah.
So it made money.
Just a minute. Yeah, just made a couple dollars. And they made, I'm sure they made lots of changes. But the one change that I want to talk about is Toni Braxton got hired on to play Belle for a while.
What?
Which I had not heard of before.
Wow, I break like, my Belle.
Yeah. And she kept on... the story is that she was a little bit hesitant to get into the show.
Okay.
I don't know if it was because she wasn't sure if it was the right move for her or if the music wasn't suitable for her or whatever her hang-up was. And they kept on having meeting after meeting after meeting with her until finally... they were having a dinner with her and one of the producers got a little bit intoxicated and told her that if she signed on, they would write a whole new song just for her.
Okay.
For coming into the production.
Listen, I would do that sober. I totally would do that sober.
Well, you're not the one writing the music.
Oh, okay.
So literally, I don't think he remembered that he promised her that until he got a phone call from somebody else in the production saying, Tony's asking where her song is. What is she talking about? And the story is in 24 hours, they had written a song for Tony.
Specifically
in the show.
That's fantastic.
And people loved it so much that it's now a permanent fixture in the show.
Wow.
And is part of every production now.
Oh, that's a good winning tactic.
So seventh new song introduced into Beauty and the Beast for Toni Braxton.
Oh.
Isn't that fun?
So what's up with the show now? Is it on tour? Can you see productions of it?
I'm sure it's on tour now. they have released the rights to people doing it, so a lot of community theaters, high schools do it. But literally, this year, big news, they're reviving Beauty and the Beast on Broadway.
Oh, okay.
Literally just found this out by researching this podcast.
How exciting.
They just announced that.
Breaking news, folks.
Breaking. they are in production on bringing it back to Broadway, apparently.
Wow.
So I don't know. Hopefully their costumes will be more comfortable. They'll probably have some new special effects. I've seen grainy video of Beast transformation.
Oh, interesting.
In the show, and it's always impressive.
Yeah.
It's such an emotional part of the show anyway. Even just watching just that scene is emotional, so you know they have to get it right.
Now, they have a show at Disney World at Hollywood Studios, right? The Beauty and the Beast Experience or something? Something like that, right?
Yes.
Do you think that's akin to the Frozen experience that they have at California Adventure?
Yeah, I don't know that it's as... It might be just as long, but it's in an outdoor theater in Florida that they do the Beauty and the Beast show.
All right.
I believe. We've never seen it. We were going to see it this last time.
We even had a fast pass.
Why didn't we go? Were we tired? I can't remember what
I don't happened. Think I in my until this podcast, I don't know if I felt the motivation to go see it.
Oh.
Now I do.
Well, we'll have to go and see it then.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to compare it to Frozen because I'm such a big fan. And we got to see the production of Frozen at California Adventure mature.
Yeah.
See them drop things, see them add things, see them...
Listen, and I was all about the 1.5-hour show.
Yeah.
When it was a 90-minute run, I loved it.
And I really enjoy their improvement even on just lighting and effects. Right. I really appreciate the work that goes into stage show in a theme park is very difficult.
Uh-huh.
So I can only imagine how difficult it is to do on a full-on Broadway stage.
Yeah.
Super impressive. So I guess look for the new Beauty and the Beast coming to Broadway sometime soon.
Oh, that's fantastic.
We'll have to see what we can do about that, huh?
Yeah.
I've never been to New York, so it would be a funny thing to be like, I'm flying all the way to New York to see Beauty and the Beast.
You know? Something I didn't even know was on my bucket list.
Right. but
who needs Frozen?
It's like I always say, hail as old as time.
Follow my perfectly sculpted two-finger point to the exit.
If you enjoyed today's podcast, rate, review us on your favorite podcast app. And if you didn't, help us do better by buying a patch at DisneyPatch.com.
Always be proud of what makes you unique. And we'll see you next time on the Obscure Disney Podcast.